Matthew 4:18 through 22. And Jesus, walking by the Sea of Galilee, saw two brothers, Simon called Peter and Andrew, his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. Then he said to them, "Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men." They immediately left their nets and followed him. Going on from there, he saw two other brothers, James, the son of Zebedee, and John, his brother, in the boat with Zebedee, their father, mending their nets. He called them, and immediately they left the boat and their father and followed him.
Good evening. How's everybody? Good. I appreciate you being here tonight. I know that usually when the bulletin says Haywood instead of Hall, it's a lighter crowd. I told them, you know, you could just make an error in there and just say Tim, you know, or Tim H, and see what happens. But you guys are the cream of the crop, and I really appreciate it. I really appreciate you being here this evening while Tim is away. What motivates you? What motivates you? Yesterday, I had the opportunity to go watch the ETSU volleyball team over in Brooks Gym, and that was exciting. The volleyball team at ETSU is really good right now. They started the season 6-0 for the first time in 28 years. They beat the Citadel, and one of our college students from Murfreesboro, Mary Catherine, I don't think she's here this evening, but she's on the team, and it was really neat to watch them play. And I get fired up at competition. I get real fired up at competition, and sometimes to the embarrassment of the people sitting around me. And I was cheering, and I was getting excited because it was such a great game. And there was a sweet older lady sitting in front of me, and she turned around after I cheered loud a couple of times, and she said, "Are you going to do that all game?" And I was a little embarrassed, but before I could even answer, she said, "Because I sure hope so." And she said, "I love it when people get excited to watch the Bucks." And so we cheered on together until I had to leave. But they played great, and it was so exciting. Watching these athletes hit that ball so hard and how much skill they had to be in just the right place. I don't understand it. I would see the ball go up, and a girl would go up and just spike it. I mean, hard enough that I think it would probably crush a head. And out of nowhere, here comes a girl on the floor to keep it from hitting the floor, and they rallied so many times, and it was just so exciting. Their ability was incredible, and I cheered and cheered and cheered. It was a fun place to be, and I was so fired up about volleyball, that as soon as I got home, I helped Amanda chop cucumbers for dinner. And then we had some friends come over, and we all played not volleyball. We all played games. You know, I was entertained. I love watching volleyball. I love being there and cheering for it, but it didn't motivate me to pick up a ball and start playing volleyball. I enjoy playing volleyball from time to time, but it didn't make me play. So when the question is asked, what motivates you? Sometimes we can get that confused, right? Because it's not what excites you. It's not what makes you happy and gets you entertained and gets you your blood pumping, but what motivates you to action? What causes you to do something? What inspires you? A few weeks ago, Blaine Kelly, who's the minister down at Morristown Church of Christ, he came up to the college house and gave a lesson called Inspiration versus Aspiration. And a lot of us have aspirations with no inspirations, right? Let me put it this way. If I were to ask everyone in the room right now, how many of you wish to be in optimal health? If I ask that question, I bet every single hand goes up, right? I mean, we all want to be in optimal health. That's great. But if I ask the question that how many people in here are really eating like you should and exercising every day, it's going to be a lot fewer hands, won't it? Because we aspire, and I'm included in that bunch, by the way. I aspire for good health, but I'm not always inspired to do the things I need to do to get there. Does that make sense? Matthew chapter 4, Perry just read this for us, and we'll look at it again, beginning in verse 18. While walking by the Sea of Galilee, he, Jesus, saw two brothers, Simon, who's called Peter, and Andrew, his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. And he said to them, "Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men." And immediately they left their nets and followed him. And going on from there, he saw two other brothers, James, the son of Zebedee, and John, his brother, in the boat with Zebedee, their father, mending their nets. And he called them, and immediately they left the boat and their father and followed him. Something about what Jesus said or how he said it inspired Peter, Andrew, James, and John to action. It inspired them to immediately leave their boats and to follow him. I imagine that there was probably more to the conversation, or maybe it was just the powerful way in which Jesus said it, but something there inspired them, and they were inspired to action. They didn't aspire. They didn't sit there and said, "Wow, man, this guy really knows what he's talking about, and after we get done here, we should really go listen to him some more. Or, you know, when I've got time, I really need to spend some time with this guy. Or when I'm not so busy, or, you know, when my schedule allows it, or, you know, when the kids get done with ball season, I'm really going to go follow this guy." They immediately quit their jobs. They were inspired to action to follow Jesus. In the world we live in, there's a difference between leaders and people who lead. Ronald Reagan inspired a country to buy America and to say no to drugs. John F. Kennedy inspired Americans to ask what they could do for their country. Vince Lombardi and John Wooden, they were able to inspire the best athletes in the country to give every ounce of effort that they possibly could, to leave it all on the court or leave it all on the field and just get maximum effort from these guys. General Dwight D. Eisenhower inspired, and the leaders of the Allied forces inspired 156,000 young men to storm the beaches of Normandy and to liberate a German-occupied France. Inspiration says, "I can, I will, I do, I did." Aspiration says, "I should, I would, I could, I didn't." I was on social media the other day, which is usually a bad idea, but I saw a preacher friend of mine who's a good guy. He asked the question, just wanting to get some discussion, if you're a Christian, why are you a Christian? And there were several answers. A lot of people chimed in. I was really interested to see what people had to say. A lot of the answers, really good answers. And a lot of them, I thought, looked like the table of contents page for Leroy Brownlow's book, Why I'm a Member of the Church of Christ, and which is a great book, by the way, and it correctly gives answers as to why and the way churches of Christ worship and practice, but that's not really why you're a Christian, right? No one's jumping off a boat to quit their job because we don't use a piano in worship, right? There's got to be something more. Something Jesus said inspired Peter, Andrew, James, and John to a point where the reason they were on that boat in that moment was suddenly less important than why they needed to be off that boat and following Jesus. They were inspired. If you're a Christian, why are you a Christian? And before you answer that question, you really need to answer a different question. Am I a Christian, or do I aspire to Christianity? Am I a disciple, or am I a fan of being a disciple? Peter and John were inspired. They left what they were doing to follow Jesus. They never stopped. In Acts chapter 2, we see the day of Pentecost. Peter preaches, and all these people are baptized. They realize that without Christ, their life is hopeless. and they put Christ on. In Acts chapter 3, they continue to preach, and we find them preaching and inspiring people to follow Christ. In chapter 4, they're arrested for doing this. They're held overnight. And in spite of this, people are still believing. In chapter 3, it says 5,000 people, in fact, are still believing. And they're questioned. And when they're questioned, when Peter and John are questioned, Peter boldly addresses the high priests. And when they're told they have to stop preaching, in verse 20, they say they don't have any choice. They have to preach Jesus. That's what's going to happen. They're going to preach Jesus regardless. So they're released. And they go and they're with the believers. And now all these believers, they are on an all-time high. They are just so excited because they saw what happened and they're pumped up. They saw what happened to Peter and John and they start praying for boldness because they see what happened to Peter and John and they say, you know what? We expect that those things are going to happen to us and we're ready and we're charged up and we are on fire. Have you ever seen a group of people so excited about something, and you say, man, I wish I could have what they have right now. Not in a material sense or in a sense of envy, but just like, man, to feel what they feel must feel great. I love watching sports. The World Series is coming up in a few weeks. Whenever a team wins a national championship or a World Series or a Super Bowl, one of my favorite things, whether I rooted for the team or not, one of my favorite things is to watch the celebration on the field and see how excited these athletes are that they won something. They sacrificed over the season. They worked out and they learned plays and they worked together and now they're celebrating with what they've accomplished. And that's amazing. And man, I wish I could just be on the field, but not just be on the field watching it. I wish in some point I could have experienced that with them, that bond and that unity they feel that they did something together. And I imagine that's what's going on, at least in a small sense, what's going on in with Peter and John in Acts chapter 4. Because they are on fire. They're so inspired and they're so unified in their cause that in verse 31, it says that as they pray for boldness, the room starts to shake. Can you imagine? There is some power in that room. There are some amazing things going on. It says they're filled with the Holy Spirit and they're sharing in some amazing power in that room. They were inspired. It goes on to say that they were of one heart and they were of one soul and that they were selling their belongings to fund the church and to give to the needy. And in verse 36, we meet a man named Joseph who apparently had been so inspired by the love of Christ that he's now gained a reputation to the point that the apostles are calling him Barnabas, which is the son of encouragement. And Barnabas is inspired by what's going on, and he sells a field, and he lays all the proceeds at the apostles' feet. And man, people are inspired to do amazing things. Let's say, well, when the parade for the world champions goes through town, I want to be there screaming for those athletes, right? I want to share in that victory. I want to be part of the team. But I know this is going to be funny. Don't laugh. But let's say the Vols win the national championship next year, right? I told you not to laugh. I know it's far-fetched, but come on, let's play fairy tale for a minute. Let's say the Vols win the national championship next year. And Jeremy Pruitt gets up in front of everybody and thanks all the fans for their support. We're so grateful for that championship. And he says, you know, we couldn't have done it without you. And everyone cheers. And he says, we want to share this victory with you. And everyone cheers. And he says, we want you to be even bigger, an even bigger part of next year's championship. And man, people can't contain themselves. The crowd is just going wild. Everybody's so excited. And he says, we want you to be an even bigger part next year. And so, tomorrow morning at 5 a.m., we're starting conditioning. Be at Neyland Stadium. We're going to run 5 miles. And then we're going to hit the gym. And you can be ready to start class at 8 o'clock. You're going to meet with your dietitian at 11 a.m. To discuss your meal plan for the year. We'll look at film after afternoon classes. We'll have team dinner at 6. Tutoring till 9, lights out at 10. And everybody's like, not quite as excited, right? Oh, whoa, coach, I want to share the victory, but this doesn't sound like something I'm really wanting to do. Quit your job, become a Pruitt disciple, and be a real part of the championship. No thanks, coach. I'm good to sit in the stands. I'm good to share in it that way. Acts chapter 4 ends with Barnabas inspired to share in that way, to sell what he has to help. And Acts chapter 5 begins with Ananias and Sapphira aspiring to have that same feeling that Barnabas had, to be viewed as holy as Barnabas, to share in that victory and that rah-rah. They aspired to look like a Christian, but they weren't inspired, were they? Because we know the story. Chapter 4, all-time high victory parade. Everyone has all things in common. And in chapter 5, Peter throws a 5-gallon bucket of cold reality on their little party. Ananias and Sapphira, of course, held back a portion of the land they sold, but they wanted so badly to seem like they were giving everything. They aspired to a level of commitment and discipleship that they just weren't inspired enough to reach. Former president, vice president, Al Gore, he's been highly praised for being outspoken when it comes to climate change and its humans' effect on the environment. In fact, he has won a Grammy. He's won an Emmy, an Academy Award, and he even won a Nobel Prize for his speeches on an inconvenient truth regarding humans' contribution to climate change. So it comes as a surprise to a lot of people, and a lot of people are kind of upset to find out that Al Gore lives alone in a 10,000 square foot, 20 bedroom mansion in Belmead, in the Belmead suburb of Nashville, and his mansion uses about 231,000 kilowatt hours a year, which the average U.S. home would take about 20 years to use that. And people are disappointed that he talks the talk but doesn't always walk the walk. And he aspires to use less energy, but he's not always inspired. But it's not just maybe people we don't always agree with, right? Y'all have heard of Josh Duggar, very outspoken religious person who was made famous by being a member of the family on the reality show 19 Kids and Counting. And he was deeply religious, and he was the executive director of the Family Research Council, which exists to promote faith, family, and freedom in the United States from a Christian worldview. Well, of course, we know the news. Josh Duggar disappointed so many people when multiple affairs came to light. And the fact that he was hiring prostitutes, he thought family values sounded really good, but he just wasn't inspired to practice them. And you know what? I can sit here and talk about Al Gore and Josh Duggar all day long, but I sometimes find myself in that place, not where Josh Duggar was, but in that place of aspiring to do something but not being inspired. Have you ever found yourself there? Oh, I want to do good. Maybe I will tomorrow. I love the picture in my head of the perfect disciple who will drop anything to serve, who will give everything he has, who never has a crossword for anyone, who's selfless, the tireless worker, the humble servant, and then when push comes to shove, I fail. And I can't do it all the time, and I can't measure up all the time, and sometimes I'm a flat-out hypocrite. Are you? You ever find yourself there? You want to be inspired, and most of the time you genuinely are. But life gets in the way, and you get fatigued, and you're tired, and inspiration gives way to aspiration, and it's fake it till you make it for a little while until eventually you find yourself in a place so far away from the person you were because you're no longer inspired. Last week, I went back to the gym. I went back to the gym last week. About a year ago, I started going to the gym with Justin Laycock, and we went every day. We went every day to the gym. Even on Sunday mornings, we'd wake up before church, get home in time to get a shower, and come be here. And I was inspired to go to the gym, in part for my own health, and in part because Justin told me if he didn't see me at the gym, he was going to come break in my house and take me. And I, if you know Justin, I truly believed him. And we would go, and we would go every day. And then if Justin had a job or had to be out of town, I was going without him. And I was inspired, and I was loving the habit. And then life started to go off the rails. In January, I lost a job. In March, we started a new business. In May, I lost a parent. In July, I started a new job. And health went from inspiration to aspiration. And I'm sure I'm not the only one that's ever been guilty of doing that, right? There are health consequences for that, for not taking care of yourself and allowing other things to get in the way. There's health consequences, and we feel those. But it's nothing compared to abandoning our Father and missing out on a home with Him. So what do we do when we're uninspired? What do we do when we find ourselves aspiring and not being inspired? Back in Matthew 4 that Perry read for us, we see Peter is inspired along with his brother Andrew to leave his nets and follow Jesus. And he's inspired in Acts 2 to preach the first gospel sermon on the day of Pentecost. And he's inspired in Acts 4 to preach to the high priest even though he was arrested. And he's inspired to continue preaching after he was told to stop. But Peter wasn't always inspired, was he? Peter kind of found himself in that game of up and down. Inspired, aspiring. That place where I find myself a lot, and where you probably find yourself a lot. Inspired, mountaintop, victory parade, and then aspiring. When the lows get low, when it's not always easy. Matthew 26, verse 31. Then Jesus said to him, "You will all fall away because of me this night. For it's written, I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. But after I'm raised up, I will go before you to Galilee." And Peter answered him and said, "Though all fall away because of you, I'll never fall away." And Jesus said to him, "Truly I tell you, this very night, before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times." Peter said to him, "Even if I must die with you, I will not deny you." And all the disciples said the same. Peter's inspired. He thinks he's inspired. He doesn't fully understand what's going on that night, but he knows that something is up. And he wants to be ready for anything. And maybe that's why a few verses later we see Peter pulling out his sword in the garden and cutting somebody's ear off, because he's ready. He knows something's going on, and if I have to die with Christ, I'm going to die with Christ. And he's ready for that battle scene. So Peter follows at a distance and watches as the evening unfolds. And maybe at the beginning of the evening, he's thinking that, all right, I need to stay close because I might need to draw this sword again. This might be that big fight, that big battle scene. But then he starts to hear the crowd. He starts to hear the charges that are read to him. He starts to hear the crowd chanting, "Crucify." He starts to witness the abuse. He starts to witness them spitting in Jesus' face, the brutality of the violence. And in verse 69, it's Peter's sitting in the courtyard, and a girl came to him and said, "You were with Jesus, the Galilean." In verse 70, he says, he denied it before them all, saying, "I do not know what you mean." Verse 71, "And when he went out to the entrance, another servant girl saw him, and she said to the bystander, 'This man was with Jesus of Nazareth.' And again, he denied it with an oath, 'I do not know the man.' After a little while, the bystanders came up and said to Peter, 'Certainly, "You too are one of them, for your accent, your speech, betrays you." And he began to invoke a curse on himself and to swear, "I do not know the man." And immediately the rooster crowed. And Peter remembered the saying of Jesus, "Before the rooster crows, you'll deny me three times." And he went out and wept bitterly. And he wept bitterly because he aspired so badly, but in Jesus' time of greatest need, he wasn't inspired. And so, in John chapter 21, ashamed of himself, in verse 3 of John chapter 21, we see that Peter goes back to the place where he found himself before that first moment of inspiration. In John 21, verse 3, he says, "I'm going fishing." And it almost sounds like, what a colossal waste. I was fishing before, I was inspired to greatness, I witnessed great things, I even did a few cool things through Jesus, but in the end, I failed. I failed him, so it's now back to square one. Back to this boat where I found myself when this whole thing started. And as day breaks, Jesus is standing on the shore, calling them in. Peter jumps out of the boat. He's so excited, he swims to shore. And they're eating breakfast, and it's apparent in this chapter that at this meeting, Jesus wants to speak to Peter. There's an elephant in the room that needs to be addressed. The last time they spoke, Jesus said he would die with Christ. But after the third time he denied Jesus, Luke says that Jesus looked down at Peter. Verse 15 of chapter 21, it says, "When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon, Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? And he said to him, Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Now, if you've studied this passage or sat through very many lessons at all, you know that there's two different words being used here. There's two different words for love being used there. Jesus says, "Peter, do you agape love me? Do you have that self-sacrificing, lay down your life love? Peter, are you inspired to really give it all?" And Peter replies, "Lord, you know I phileo you." He essentially says, "Lord, you're my best friend, and you're like family to me. You're like a brother to me. I love you as much as I can." And Jesus said to him, "Feed my lambs." And he said to him a second time, "Simon, son of John, do you love or do you agape me?" And he said, "Yes, Lord, you know that I phileo you." He said, "Tend my sheep." He said to him a third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" The third time he said, "Do you phileo me?" And it says, Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, "Do you phileo me?" And he said to him, "Lord, you know everything. You know everything, and you know that I phileo you." And Jesus said to him, "Feed my sheep." Peter aspires to agape love, but he knows that his track record says no. He wants to be inspired, but he isn't. He wants to scream that he'll die for Jesus, but when placed in that situation, he failed. He was a fan screaming on the sidelines, not actually wanting to give what it took to step on the field. And Jesus says, "I need you. I need you to die for me, but I need you to love me like a brother too." And some days, you'll be on top of that mountain and you're really going to be ready to die for me, and I know it. But some days, you're going to be at rock bottom. And you'll be sick, and you're going to be tired, and you're going to be broke, and the kids are going to be sick, and the car's going to break down, and the crowds all around you are going to be chanting, "Crucify," and Satan will be attacking you, and you're going to be ashamed of the decisions you made, and I need you. And I need you. And I need you then too. I need you to show people that when you fall down, you can get back up. I need you to show people that we're all human, and we all make mistakes. And I need you all the time. And when times get tough and you stop going to the gym, and that you can go back. But more importantly, when times get tough and you lose your inspiration, you can get it back. You can get it back. I need you, Peter. I need you. So back to that social media question. Why are we a Christian? Why are we a Christian? Not how are we a Christian. That's the plan of salvation. That's how we become a Christian. And not the what, right? The what is the worship and the order of worship, the Leroy Brownlow book, right? But the why. Why are we inspired to follow Christ? What inspired you to follow Christ? That day that you realized that life really had no meaning without His cause, without His cause for greatness. The day that you realized that you wanted to learn to love Christ more every day and day after day for the rest of your life to grow in that relationship with Him. The day that you realized life just simply couldn't be complete without a relationship with God. And this life, the day we realize that this life will not always be perfect, but that living with Him was the ideal, and that it was the ideal for perfect harmony and living in perfect harmony. So the question is, are we inspired? Are we inspired to live for Jesus? You know, if I asked to raise your hands, and we answered honestly, I believe that a lot of you would say, I'm inspired. I'm inspired. Here's the stands I made this week. And I think a lot of you would probably say, I'm aspiring right now. Times are tough. We've got a lot going on. And that's okay. Because God still needs you. He still needs you. And He says, come on, let's go. Feed my lambs. You want to be, you need to aspire right now? That's okay. Strive for that inspiration. Don't let it keep you down. Don't let it keep you down. Sometimes we're inspired. Sometimes we're cutting ears off and we're standing at the top of mountains and we're riding in the victory parade. And sometimes we're maintaining a regular position in a regular pew to be viewed as a good person, because when push comes to shove, Jesus is denied for things that are greater in our life, right? Sometimes. Jesus calls to our boat and says, follow me, follow me. And we say, you know what, after this athletic season, I really will, I promise. I'm going to follow you. Or, once work calms down and things kind of even out, I'm going to get out of the boat and I'm going to follow you. I promise that's going to happen. Once the kids get a little older, it's tough. Once the kids get a little older, I promise I'm going to follow you. Once I get this big project I'm working on, just let me get this out of the way, and I'm going to get out of the boat and I'm going to follow you. Or do we drop it all? Do we drop it all because we're inspired, because nothing is more important than the cause for Christ? Aspiring or inspired, Christ needs you today. Will you come to Him? If you're not a Christian, you can become a Christian tonight. Faith, repentance, confession, and baptism. And if you are a Christian who's struggling, who's aspiring, who has lost that inspiration, we can pray for you. We can help you through those tough times that have got you in that hole, that have put your fire out. We can help you. That's what we're here for. That's why we're a family. That's why we're a body. If you've got things that, if you've let things get in the way, though, and put that light out, put that fire out, and you need to put them back on, we'll pray for that, too. Whatever your need is, please come forward as together we stand and sing.